Hello everyone and welcome to Ask Margot, my show today. My name is Margot de Coatsworth and I'm delighted to be here and to be hosting this Q&A about any matters that are keeping people stuck or feeling small or feeling sick. By way of introducing myself today, I came across the following, which is from a chap who works in the same area as me with hypnotherapy and helping people to unlock the cause of problems in their lives by discovering the root subconscious cause of that thing and flipping the switch at that level. It's incredibly transformative work, and I know people toss around the word transformation so easily and frequently these days. It's such a big word, and claiming it is a big claim. To transform something surely is to take it from one state to a completely different state. Sometimes we get overly dramatic about the words we use, I know I do, and we can overestimate the results. In my therapy though, it is truly an applicable word because it changes your state and your understanding at a subconscious level, which is where our power for change lies. We live with a silly misunderstanding that we can make change by influencing what's outside of us. That's such hard work and very often not possible. And even if you can achieve it, it often doesn't stick. However, if you change things at a subconscious level and you make a shift there from what you don't want to what you do want, you can change that programming that's running behind everything in your life. It can set you free. I've seen it. It's amazing. I get quite fired up about this because it's so powerful and so effective and so quick. Imagine if you just didn't have to go and talk to somebody about your issue every week for 2.5 years or into some long distant point in the future. I'm very much focused on let's find the problem, fix it, so that we can get on with the good stuff in life. Anyway, this is what I came across regarding the efficacy of subconscious work like this. Apparently, in 2015, the Health Science Journal published a randomized trial of 5,000 patients and found that psychosensory therapy, that's just about using your senses in therapy, such as emotive visualization, imagining you've already got what you're after, for example, was far more effective than traditional therapy and even medications for mental health issues. And that's because they literally reset the biological structure of the brain for calm and peace in seconds, because psychosensory techniques work faster and more effectively and much less expensively than many other techniques. I'm always careful to say any modality can work, especially if we put our belief behind it. So I never poo-hoo someone else's approach, unless I think it's really off. Apparently, one of the biggest breakthroughs in modern psychological times is the discovery of neuro-linguistic programming. That's a part of what I do. Barack Obama, Oprah Winfrey, and nearly every major sports person and modern therapist uses this or a form of this psychological therapy because it allows you to run your own brain. Isn't that fantastic? To be able to run our own brains. That's surely what we should be aspiring to. We have control over our thoughts and feelings. We can overcome limiting beliefs and we can turn around unwanted behaviors. They also help you to understand how other people think, and that's got to be helpful in life. I do think there's something inside all of us as human beings that holds a candle of hope. We hope that things will get better. We hope we can find an answer. We hope our lives will be happier, more harmonious, more effective, more successful. To my mind, anything that helps us get from where we are to where we want to be is a good thing, and it's worth looking at and pursuing. So that's my little soapbox for the day. Let's look at our first question. All our questioners today that have names that begin with the letter N for confidentiality. So Ned wrote in and said that he was concerned about the people around him who seem to be angry about so many things. They're angry with other people. They're angry with the traffic. They're angry with the noise levels. They're angry with badly behaved children and dogs and everything, almost, he said. And when people get going with things that upset them, it feels like it's almost out of control, like they're going to ignite. He wants to know how to handle that. It's an interesting question, Ned, and I've also seen quite a lot of anger, just low-level anger that seems to be running in the background of people's lives. When thinking about this, one way to diffuse someone who's being angry and possibly aggressive is to agree with them. You don't have to agree with what they're saying or their point of view, but you can agree that you hear them. You can agree that you see their frustration, that they're frustrated, and that you see their frustration. If someone's ranting, you can say, yes, I hear you. You can say, yes, I see that point of view. You can say, yes, I know this has been an issue for you. I know I'm always saying this, but can you feel the energy of that? It's calming, it's leveling, it's diffusing. It's like pouring oil on, what do they say, rough water, something like that. It just works because you're standing alongside that person and you're saying, I get you, I empathize. You're not necessarily saying, I agree with what you're saying. You're just saying, I empathize with the fact that this is bothering you so much. If you do that, you will calm things down. If you want to particularly make the point that you don't agree, you can say, I appreciate your point of view and I appreciate that's how you feel. I understand what you're saying. As an instant response, I think this is good. Because whatever you do in this kind of situation, you do not want to add fuel to the fire. And of course, equally, you don't want to agree with something that you think is not right. And this is one way of handling it. In some situations, you need to ask yourself, is it going to be productive to enter into a conversation like this with this person? Is there enough common objective to get you to a solution or a conclusion? If you know the answer to that is no, that they're going to argue that point to the end without any desire to collaborate on an outcome, then do not go there. I have a personal philosophy that is, if I feel a person and I can walk together in the same kind of the same direction to get somewhere, I'll enter into the conversation. But if I know that they're just cutting across in an aggressive and determined way to make their point accepted, I won't do it. It's a kind of spiraling outcome that will take you absolutely nowhere and probably make both of you angry. Those sorts of conversations can happen around politics or what people call religion or other controversial ones like COVID or vaccinations. If people aren't open to look at a bigger picture or consider another point of view or learn something they perhaps didn't know, then don't enter into it. That's when you say, I hear what you're saying, and you leave it at that. This is about self-respect, really, because why would you want to enter into an argument with somebody when you could enter into a conversation with somebody else? We get to choose. That's the great thing about life. We do get to choose what we talk about, who we talk to, and why. The other thing, and this is what I ask myself, if something feels off in my life, I ask myself, is there something in me that's attracted this? We never like that question, of course. It's annoying, and we just don't want to ask those kinds of things of ourselves. But nevertheless, it doesn't hurt to say, I've got nothing to hide from myself. I wonder if I have anything to do with this. Perhaps being especially difficult or annoying person sometimes could be a factor. I just think these sorts of questions are good for us to say, I'll look at me and see where I fit into this. The problem may be outside of us, but there's food for thought in there. It's a worthy consideration. One thing about the anger situation, Ned, is that like all negative conversation or energy, we must learn to become expert diverters so that we can point people away from the negative thing that's not serving anybody and send them in a direction of a more elevated thought. If you feel you're in a situation where anger is running amok and is going to spill over into a whole lot more anger or some other, what shall I say, divergent behavior, like somebody giving somebody a thump, then the smartest thing to do may well be just to hot-foot it away from them. Get out of that space, and that may be appropriate to say something like, this is not for me. Or I guess people can continue in a rage by themselves, but I imagine it will fizzle pretty quickly with no one there to direct it to. Hopefully that's helpful, Ned. And speaking of negativity, that brings me to our second question today. This is from Natalie. She said a friend of hers told her that there was a movement that was a bad one, and it was called toxic positivity. She thought he was sort of joking, but apparently he wasn't. Natalie says, what is this and how can something be positive and toxic at the same time? Isn't that like saying light can be on and a light can be off at once, or something can be black and white at the same time, or right and wrong at the same time? Well, I confess I'd never heard this term, so I did a bit of research and here's what I found out. Toxic positivity is the belief that no matter how difficult or painful a situation is, people should maintain a positive mindset and suppress any negative emotions. It often involves dismissing or invalidating real feelings in favor of surface-level optimism. Examples of toxic positivity would be saying, just stay positive to someone who's going through grief or loss, or telling a struggling friend, everything happens for a reason. Well, that's really annoying. Instead of acknowledging their pain. Or insisting it could be worse, rather than allowing someone to express frustration or sadness. Or repressing your own negative feelings because you feel you should be grateful. This, of course, invalidates real emotions. It tells people their pain isn't acceptable or valid or worth acknowledging. It discourages healthy emotional processing. Suppressing difficult emotions can lead to anxiety, shame, or emotional detachment. It creates isolation, and none of us want that. People feel upset and unseen if they can't share their struggles sometimes. And it undermines resilience. True resilience comes from processing all our emotions, dealing with them all, and not pretending that everything's fine by suppressing them. A healthy alternative, according to my research, is to promote emotional honesty and supportive optimism. This means acknowledging the pain and holding hope. Saying things like, this is hard, I'm here for you, it's okay to feel what you're feeling. So what it means is that people are detaching from the connection and the support that they should be offering to someone who's in a difficult situation. I entirely agree that it's important for people to acknowledge what they're dealing with and that we should always be sensitive to that. I think it's unfortunate too, this positivity, toxicity thing, because it gives positivity a bad name. And I actually think, generally speaking, positivity is so much better than negativity. Not many people would disagree with that. I guess for me in this situation, saying things like, this is hard, let me know if I can do anything to support you, is the right place to start. We all want to be seen and heard. We need that. We all want to be empathized with, and so we should. I guess my only comment, Natalie, would be to make sure that you're offering people something that's helping them. So number one is to stand alongside them and say, I see you, I hear you, I'm here for you. Let me know what I can do. To me, the toxicity would come in if you never offer them any lifeline or hope or encouragement after that. That would be a shame. So toxic positivity out and sensitive positivity in. The trick, of course, is to offer people not what you think they need, but what they actually need. Therein lies one of the biggest challenges to us, which is not to project our stuff onto other people, but to meet them where they are. The worst thing we can do is feed a downward spiral when that never helps anybody. There's a pit down there, you know, where people get lost in despair and no one belongs there. You know what it's like when a conversation starts and people add to it by bringing up their own examples of the same negative thing. So it's carried along, but it's nowhere that any of us want to go. This often happens with health. We sympathize, we tell them about our experience, and then there we are, allowing no positive space for good health, only what's wrong, how bad it is, and who's dying from it. Let's divert that one because it does not serve us at all. Our next question today is about AI, which is all anybody talks about these days, of course, and AI has changed our lives in every conceivable area. It's sped things up, it's enriched, informed, and curated everything. I was talking to Niles just yesterday about a mutual writer, a speaker and a visionary we both know, who in fact departed this life in 1972. The question came up about this newly posted work of his on YouTube. I've been listening to it. It was very comprehensive, and there are many videos of him speaking about the kinds of things we knew him for or know him for. There was nothing that I listened to that I found jarring or not to be true or consistent with him, though I realised that the videos were obviously curated by AI because they didn't exist before, or I hadn't seen them before. And then when I was watching, he mentioned scrolling and posting or something to do with social media, and it suddenly clicked that when he was alive, there was no such thing. So this was not actually his work. I guess I already knew that it was being put together. I did know that. But I didn't click that they weren't just a collation of his work. They were an interpretation of it. They were an augmentation of it. It was AI speaking in his stead. Wow. This brought home to me just how important it is for us to use discernment, or I like to call it our inner truth meter, which I believe we all have. Some of our truth meters are a bit rusty and a bit clogged and confused. So I think it's a good thing for us to think about that and to realize that we are going to be bombarded with so much that is beyond the usual truth and opinion that we are used to. It's going to be a kind of perception of reality or a perception of truth and not necessarily the real deal. It's imperative then that we use discernment to say, does this sit with me? Does it fit with what I know to be true? Or we may well be led up the garden path to somewhere really, really confusing and clouded. I guess the way to deal with this is to know who you are, what your values are, what you believe, what you stand for, and what you don't stand for. Have your own clear perception about what's true. I work with words a lot, and I love it for the way they perfectly express something important or clever or insightful. But sometimes I read AI-written things, and I think it says absolutely nothing. It's just a collection of words. Well, that's of no use to us at all. We don't need to be fed a whole lot of fluffy, touchy-feely nonsense that has no meaning. We have to have our wits about us. We have to remember that one and one is two, and not three, in this sense anyway. I always think that truth stands the test of time. Social norms and acceptability change, and we can see that with all the things we accept societally now that we never once did. People can actually live as they want to now. They don't have to be squeezed into society's opinion of what they should and shouldn't do and who they should be. But truth, the value of us as individuals, our need to care for each other, to respect ourselves, to be respected, all these things are true. And those truths stand the test of time. We can rely on them. We can be certain of them. When you meet people who are all over the place and don't know whether they're coming or going, who seem to be in a constant state of confusion, not really knowing which direction to take and which decisions to make, those people have not tuned into their inner guidance, their truth meter. We don't have to live like that. And the way to stop that kind of cloudiness in your life is to pay attention to when you get an inner lead, a kind of knowing. Some people call it a hunch. There are many words for it. Intuition, guidance, sort of like a drop of divinity into your brain, whatever you like to call it. When you get one of those, follow it, hook onto it. The more you do that and follow your internal lead, your internal guidance, to clear your path forward, the clearer that path will be. You'll see the stuff that's not going to serve you, and you will see the path you ought to follow. It's exciting, really, because it shows we have influence in our lives, power. All we need to do is to hook onto that intuitive prompt when it comes, the thought or the thing to do, and follow it. I talked about this with Niles, and I'm glad to be sharing it with you because I think it's an important factor in living a happy life. And that's what we're all after all, isn't it? Thank you for that, Niles. Our last question today is about maturity in a relationship. It's from Natalia. She says she just wants to go out with someone who's emotionally mature and not someone who acts like a boy. She says she's made a mistake before by marrying a boy when she thought she was marrying a man. She says she's stumped and wants to know how she can filter out the boys and find a man in all the so-called men out there. Ah, Natalia, I think you're not alone in this. Many people have mistaken a polished exterior, confidence, outward confidence maybe, or even charisma for maturity, only to find themselves in a relationship with someone who still needs tending. And of course, this works the other way for men and women as well. Emotional maturity isn't about age, job title, or how someone presents on a first date. It's about how they handle discomfort, responsibility, and their own emotions. A man, a real man, is someone who can hold space for another person's experience without making it about him. Someone who can apologize, stay present in a hard conversation, and isn't threatened by a woman's capability. So how do you filter out the boys? You watch for how they respond when things aren't going their way. Do they blame? Do they shut down? Do they sulk? Or do they reflect, communicate, and stay engaged? You could ask questions early like, what do you do when you're hurt and how do you handle conflict? But you have to see these responses in action. You must listen for jarring comments. Orange flags are most probably actually red flags. The orange just means stop and pay attention. Talk about everything and observe their conversation and their comments and responses. If you pick someone who makes prejudice, bigoted, racist, sexist comments, I'm telling you now, he is without a doubt a prejudiced, bigoted, racist, sexist chap who you must smile at and say goodbye to. Because people who aren't that do not make those comments. They just don't think like that. You could say, what have you learned from past relationships? Ask this question of him. That's a doozy. And whatever they say will tell you much. It will tell you if they can forgive. It will tell you if they take responsibility. It will tell you if they are a victim, an optimist, or a pessimist. It will tell you a lot, this question. What have you learned from past relationships? They have to answer it. And if they don't stop talking about their past relationships or they lament who they've lost, then that tells you something also. They need to sort their stuff and not drag you into a world where they haven't done that. Listen to what they say and watch what they do. As you deepen in your own emotional maturity, you'll become a magnet for someone who's done the same. You won't need to search so hard because the boys won't interest you anymore. You'll pick them straight away, and no matter how charming, it won't matter. And the man won't need convincing. He'll recognize you too. So you're not really stumped, Natalia. You're getting wiser. Noticing the difference between boys and men is the first step in filtering and choosing somebody who's a match for you. I just want to say again that when I answer questions like this, even though, of course, being female, I probably inevitably filter through female eyes, I do think it's important to say that the same works for men as women. There are women who are just girls, and there are women who are grown up and emotionally mature. And men equally need to filter, so they choose a woman who's strong enough, clear enough, and mature enough to meet them emotionally where they are. It goes both ways. My philosophy has always been, let the boys find the girls, and the women the men, and that all that's left is for the baby men and the baby women to find a match in each other, and hopefully live happily ever after. If you're with someone who's an emotionally compatible match for you, you probably are not discontented there. Well, that's two negatives, isn't it? You probably are content and could live happily ever after. Well, that was our last question today. Please do send any questions you have into us at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margounlimited.com. Now, let's finish with the word, our message from the universe. This is a great one. It's part actually of a larger message, but it's so powerful. And I thought, my intuition tells me it's just right for today. Become a master of managing yourself, your state, and your responses to everything. That is the key for you to be as successful at everything as you want to be. Be a master. Don't just say it. You want to be a master manifester, but first, you must be a master manager. Thank you for being with me today. See you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.